Secret World Chronicle, a podcast series created by Mercedes Lackey and Steve Libby. The Navy SEAL, written and read by Veronica Jaguer. The base in Lorient had none of the charm of the French countryside that surrounded it. In the 2 years since the Kriegsmarine had taken over operations, Lorient had become the crown jewel of the German Navy. Cries of Schnellen, Eil oben! Rang through the port as sailors raced to equip the submarines for their next mission against the Allies. Crewmen loaded rations and munitions in a steady supply line, crates passing from hand to hand. From the end of the pier, a decorated officer watched with a mixture of pride and satisfaction. His crew, a shining example of the power of the Third Reich, had completed another mission against Britain's feeble fleet. Their return to port unscathed marked 417 successful sinkings, a record achieved by the most experienced captains and crews. Such a reputation marked them as privileged, tasked with a greater mission. The captain clasped his hands behind his back and breathed deeply. In the backyard of the Americans, he and his crew would make their mark as the most feared sons of Germany's glorious empire. Next to him, the executive officer seemed to share his pride as the supply line finished loading the last crates on board. The XO gave a shrill whistle, his orders answered with crisp salutes, as the men lined up in formation on the hull, were dismissed, and prepared to set sail. A young sailor, smartly dressed and eager to please, brought a message to the CO. Visitors from the capital had arrived, and they had asked to see the captain before he embarked on his journey. Leaving the XO to oversee the final preparations, the captain entered the office and immediately felt his stomach wrench. What felt like ice raced down his spine as he recognized the death's head insignia against a field of crisp black fabric. The captain managed a terse nod, his expression calculated to show nothing less than cool courtesy.
"This is unexpected. You are aware that we depart this evening, Lieutenant."
The other visitor stood behind the lieutenant, trying to hide from the captain's stoic gaze. With her exotic features and swarthy complexion, she was out of place in a uniform of the German forces. Gypsies did not enlist with the Kriegsmarine. She kept her head bowed as the captain's lip curled into a sneer. He commanded a crew of the finest sailors and could not imagine why the SS would insist that this woman, a mongrel at that, accompany one of their lieutenants to Lorient.
"I have no time for this."
The officer presented the captain with a sealed envelope, ignoring the man's antipathy.
"I have been instructed to say that you, Captain. Part of your mission against the Americans involves the use of a new weapon."
He motioned to the woman, who cringed at the sudden attention.
"You have seen that the orders are legitimate, Captain." "A woman on board," he snorted. "But nonsense, and a half-breed at that."
The shuffle of paper was soon drowned out by the ordered footfalls of soldiers marching in regiment. The captain scowled at the second page, going so far as to reread the first paragraph before fixing the gypsy with a critical eye. She ducked her head further, the motion eliciting a chuckle from the man as he skimmed the rest.
"An added bonus," the officer commented as the CO finished reading, "is that she speaks very little German. You can be certain that she will not understand you or your crew. And properly tended, even dogs grow to be extremely loyal to their masters."
The captain folded the paper while circling the woman. As she shied away, he reached forward to tilt the young woman's chin up, as if he were expecting a shepherd bitch for good breeding. Her trembling brought a smirk to his face.
"Excellent, Lieutenant. We set sail within the hour."
The expression on the supervising shipyarder's face meant one of two things. Either someone was in trouble, or someone was about to be in trouble.
he held a hushed conference with the two burly men who had come to see him, the words drowned out by the hiss of welding torches and the clatter of tools on the deck. Every so often, he would raise his head and look in the direction of a team working near the waterline. After a few minutes more consultation, the supervisor motioned for one of the crew to come over.
"Sir?"
The young man couldn't have been more than 13 or 14 years old, and his voice squeaked as he realized that the men accompanying his boss were honest-to-goodness U.S. Navy officers. In the summer of 1942, it was difficult for any teenager not to be awed by the presence of a decorated military man. He fumbled a messy salute and stood a little straighter.
"Yes, sir?"
"These two men come looking for Mr. Gordy. You seen him, Oliver?"
The supervisor frowned at the scrawny dockhand's gesture. The kid nodded and motioned towards one of the smaller storage shacks and saluted again.
"All right, back to work."
If only the kid could show him the same sort of snap-to attitude that he put on for these Navy men. He waved the kid off and pointed towards the shack.
"If you follow me, sirs, we'll find your man."
They walked between the crowds, avoiding the sparks from torches and the jagged pieces of metal scattered about. The USS Shangri-La cast a shadow over the constant activity, but the shade did little to cool the yard in the oppressive July sun. Considering the time of day and the way the summer heat hung heavy over this part of the yard, it only made sense that Gordy was trying to find a cool spot to rest. They found Gordy in the back, a wet towel over his thick neck as he wheezed and snorted. Both shirts he wore had been soaked through with sweat, and more perspiration dripped from his shaven head. In spite of the heat, he wore a pair of thick welding gloves and heavy boots. He raised his head and squinted at the three men, struggling to stand as he recognized the uniforms.
"Sit down, Gordy. These men come looking for you. Say they need you for some special sort of job."
The supervisor removed his hat and rubbed his forehead, watching his man with an air of concern. In heat like this, he had seen lesser men collapse from exhaustion.
"You want me to have them wait outside until you cool off more?"
The larger man shook his head, his broad shoulders slumping forward. He coughed and mopped his face with a damp kerchief.
"Not gonna cool off much more, Cap. Besides, these gentlemen look like they came a ways for something. Wouldn't want to waste the time of a military man."
One of the uniformed men escorted the supervisor to the door, going so far as to place his ear to the panel until the coast was clear. He gave a signal to his partner, who pulled up a chair next to the heavyset man. Gordy didn't get visitors. That wasn't to say he didn't enjoy talking to people or didn't welcome the chance to have a squad of company, but these were strangers in uniforms. He turned his head slightly, counting the number of bars and patches. Fairly high rank, he figured, although the appropriate title escaped him. That wouldn't have changed his current opinion. Neither of the men had spoken to him. Instead, they stared at him as if he was some sideshow animal or shipyard novelty. More importantly, they pushed Cap out the door as quickly as he had come in, treating him like some doddering old fool. It was a level of secrecy and disrespect that Gordy disliked in the younger yard workers. To see that behavior mirrored by two Navy officers brought a scowl to the big man's face, and he squinted at each to see who would try to talk first. The man in the chair next to him spoke up.
"Gordon Wendell, word is that you're a pretty talented man around these parts. Something of a legend when it comes to finding things."
"I do what I can do with what I got, sir,"
Gordy replied with a wheeze.
"Help where I'm needed, do what I'm asked, all in an honest day's work."
He took a gulp of air and managed to lift his head. Thick folds of skin masked the presence of a neck, the stubble around his cheeks and chin white and coarse. His nose appeared to have been broken multiple times, the bridge flattened to the width of a grown man's thumb. His leathery complexion broke into a neat white smile that softened his otherwise rough features.
Not nearly what our boys are facing overseas, but we all work the best we can to help them, right?
The man in the chair did not return the smile. Instead, he bent to pick up a large wrench that someone had left on the ground. He weighed the heavy tool in his hand, finally letting it drop with a thud.
"Say that young pup out there drops this over the side," he said. Gets all flustered, his hands slip, and before he knows it, he's lost another expensive piece in the water. Are you the sort of man to go and get it?
Gordy shrugged, the sniff he had intended becoming more of a waffle and a snort. While he gave the younger guys a good-natured lecture every time he had to fetch a dropped hammer or wrench, he didn't take kindly to the military man's tone. Most of the kids worked just as hard as the older men, knowing full well that they could be drafted before supper time on any given day. This outsider had no right speaking of his boys like that, having never spent a day out in the yards alongside them.
"I think it's only right to help out someone who's still a little wet behind the ears, sir,"
he said. He snorted again, turning his head enough to check the man at the door.
"Something wrong with good manners and helping out a fellow in need?"
The man at the door ignored Gordy's question.
"Mr. Wendell," he said in a brusque voice, "I'll have to ask that you remove your gloves before we go any further."
Gordy scowled and struggled to stand. He took a labored breath and drew himself up to all 6 feet and 7 inches that he possessed. He clenched his gloved hands, his voice dropping to an irritated bass. Initial suspicion and vague dislike grew to anger and open disgust, the grimace on his face ugly. There could have been bars and medals covering every inch of the visitor's uniforms, and he wouldn't have felt the need to pander to this rude request.
"I don't know what this is supposed to be," he rumbled. "But I worked too long and fought too hard to make a dollar, just to become part of some big government witch hunt."
He remembered his early years at the yard had been filled with questions, stares, and outright nasty remarks. Hard work and the figurative thick skin had helped him to prove his ability beyond the physical appearance, and the rest of the men on his team were quick to defend him against the occasional ugly word or gesture. Gordy had started his work at the docks because no military recruiter would let someone like him enlist, and these two in the shed only served as a harsh reminder of that time. He took a step forward to tower over the seated military man, his raised hand pointing towards the yard.
"I work out there to help our boys fight them Nazi sons of bitches because I can't do it myself. And I'll be damned if I'm going to see someone disgrace that uniform by acting like what we're fighting."
Gordy's last words came in a snarl as he threw the handkerchief down and waited for an answer. The man at the door showed no sign of fear or surprise at the outburst, as if he faced down angry men twice his size on a daily basis. He answered Gordy's tirade with a professional chuckle.
"Mr. Wendell, to make a long story short, those Nazi sons of bitches are making a mess of our yard."
He watched as the big man's expression went from furious to confused before continuing. "And considering all that we've heard about you, we think that you're the perfect man to help us clean things up." Katya soon realized that on this ship, the officer in the black uniform held an authority matched only by the captain. Even among his countrymen, the death's head insignia evoked a sense of fear-induced respect. Katya soon realized that on this ship, the officer in the black uniform held an authority matched only by the captain. Even among his countrymen, the death's head insignia evoked a sense of fear-induced respect. He kept the other crewmen from coming too close, ensured that she had enough to eat, and made certain she stayed in quarters that earned her envious and resentful stares from many of the other men. When she did sleep, the memory of the showers filled her dreams. She had survived, burned by the gases and haunted by the dying screams of the elderly, the young, and the infirm. The fact that they were strangers had kept her from going mad. But terror and anguish needed no translation as the cries surrounded her, then faded as hundreds and hundreds suffocated in her midst. Thought to be too weak by the Germans to work in their slave camps, she had been slated as another casualty. But when they had come to retrieve the bodies, they had regarded her with an air of fascination. How a supposedly weak creature had withstood the horrors of the gas chamber had mystified the doctors at the facility. They tried a second time, watching through the glass as she held her breath while the cells filled with the noxious air. A third time, they tried to drown her, but she remained alive under the water for the better part of an hour. So they studied her, a pet to show the visiting officers and a fascinating specimen for the scientists. She had given up hope that Vili had survived as she had. Separated upon their arrival, Katya was certain that he had perished in another of the large concrete chambers where many entered upon their arrival, and none, save her, had lived to know what they truly contained. She had only been thankful that they had not been together long enough to bring children into such a horrible world. The scientist had brought Vili to her after the last demonstration. He was rail thin, eyes sunken, and his thick dark hair shaven. The way his eyes lit up, she could tell he was both grateful and envious, for she had been fed and groomed to appeal to the German visitors. 5 minutes in strict silence passed quickly, but it had been enough for the Nazis' purpose. Now they knew what she was to him, and what he was to her. That evening, she had met the SS officer who had brought her on board. He spoke her language with a faint accent, and he made her an offer. Serve their cause with her gift, and they would treat her husband well, as a household servant. Refuse their offer, and she would join him in the gas chambers, condemned to watch him die before her breath gave out, and she succumbed to the same awful fate. To die meant nothing to one whose nightmares haunted her and made sleep a nightly descent into hell. But to watch the man she loved suffer because of her own selfish choice. They both lived, and she followed orders so that he was treated well. When she did see him, he appeared healthy, almost happy. To have him believe that she was not the same would have made him miserable. So for him, she smiled and continued the pretty lie, the complacence and voluntary servitude that kept them alive. The thud of footsteps against the metal grating shook Katya from her memories. The SS officer entered, followed by one she had not seen before. She noted his uniform and the decorations on it. Someone in authority, but not so high as the men who ran the ship. He scowled at her as he continued his disgruntled conversation with her, Handler. Once the grumbling man left, the officer sat next to her, his manners almost brotherly since they had arrived on the ship. "That was one of the engineers," he said. "It would appear that there is a problem with the ship." His expression became grave, his voice low. "They must do repairs, but if the enemy discovers us, then we will not reach the shore for our mission. If we fail, won't they believe you to be dead?" He trailed off, watching her eyes as she realized the severity of the situation. If she failed, then there was no reason for her beloved to be treated well. Her promise would have been for naught. The officer placed a warm hand over hers. "But you assist. The engineer, he told me what could be done, but they lack your gift," he said. His smile widened as she nodded fervently, and he clasped her small hand in a grateful gesture. "I will tell him myself," he said, standing. "Rest. We have much work to do soon enough." The door to the compartment closed slowly once more. Both the head engineer and the XO waited, their expressions skeptical.
"Well?" the XO asked. "Will she be able to lay the mines? Untethered? I know she doesn't need an air hose, but aren't you concerned about her escape?"
The SS officer gave a wolfish grin.
"You underestimate our olfactmen. This is the strength of having a woman in your service. The ties to her family are far stronger than any rope we could provide.
Gordy had never been outside Norfolk, save for a church function with his mother as a child. This place was certainly no tent revival. The food was first class, the sheets in the barracks had that crisp smell to them, and people in uniforms were calling him Sir. When he was at the pools with the doctors and the officers, they called him Navy SEAL. The training they had him begin wasn't any harder than a day's work at the yard, and he didn't have to hide his feet and hands. At the facility at Little Creek, they had clocked Gordy at 35 minutes for a 30-foot dive. The resident doc figured that Gordy could probably go as deep as 135 feet and not suffer for it. Still, they had reminded him as he boarded the seaplane, the depth of the water was the least of his worries.
Navy SEAL, sir? We're nearly here,
the kid yelled over the roar of the plane.
You doing okay?
Gordy managed a nod despite the amount of sweat pouring down his face and the feeling that his stomach was ready to leap out of his throat. He wished they would let people call him by his real name, but he could argue the moniker later.
Doing just fine, he rasped. Guess they build your types with guts of steel these days, huh?
Nah, sir, we lose our breakfast plenty out here. That's why you don't see any fat flyboys.
The kid laughed his own joke before yanking the door open. Below, the water shimmered in the July sun, the serene surface concealing a wealth of trouble beneath. Before Gordy could protest, the kid unfastened his shoulder harness and held his upper arm with surprising strength.
Straight into the water, sir. We give you 20 minutes to find the target. She'll be big, probably running slow to lay mines. You mark her, come straight up.
He motioned towards a cutter and support boats in the distance.
Crew will pick you up once you surface in the given window, he said. No later.
Gordy nodded, too queasy to speak. Instead, he flashed a smile at the kid and moved towards the door. With a deep breath, the man crossed his arms over his chest, said a quick prayer, and jumped. The rush of cool water jarred Gordy out of the nauseous, semi-conscious state he'd endured on the plane. He kicked to the surface for a deeper breath of air, then disappeared under the waves. Within seconds, the film covering his eyes cleared, his vision ideal for the task at hand. Hands and feet that made him clumsy and unbalanced on land gave him a certain grace in the water. The water pressed against him as he dove deeper, sinking more than swimming into the darker and colder waters of the Atlantic coast. At 20 feet, the water was pleasant and refreshing, the colors vibrant and diverse. At 40 feet, the temperature began to drop, the brighter hues began to fade, and Gordy felt the pressure of the water begin to close about him. 60 feet became 80 feet, and the environment darkened to a deceptively calm blur of deep green and cool blue. His nostrils and ears closed tight against the salt water. Gordy continued to swim deeper and deeper. A shadow flickered across the bottom, an odd clicking noise carrying through the water. He froze, blinked to clear his vision, and listened. There was something, or someone else, down here, and that was unexpected. It would be 10 years this autumn, the moment when his life had changed forever. An accident at the yard had sent him into the water, pinned by a piece of anchor chain as thick as a man's arm, and they had all assumed the worst. And as for Gordy himself, stuck in the frigid November waters, he had struggled until his vision faded and his pulse thudded in his ears, and finally, long after he should have been dead, he floundered to the surface. His mother had called it a miracle that he had survived. The doctors had called it remarkable and spent weeks interviewing him while he fought off a mild case of pneumonia. Gordy had merely called it luck and asked when he could go back to work running tools and supplies at the yard. In spite of his near-death experience, Gordy was, if anything, more at home in the water than ever. The shadow flickered beneath him again, the rush of bubbles and metallic thunk proof enough that something, and someone, was down there. Gordy swam back and down another 10 feet, watching the shadow dart back and forth along the sea floor. An immense shape loomed in front of him, the markings familiar to anyone who read the papers. A U-boat, from what he could tell, and certainly the largest that he had seen. He had seen the pictures at the military briefings, but it didn't compare to seeing one this close. Gordy moved closer, careful to stay well above the propeller shaft. The numbers and insignia matched what he had been told to expect. But the fact that he was here, able to lay a hand against a Nazi submarine, prompted him to pause and shake his head. He trembled, the touch careful lest he alert those inside to his presence. The smooth, cool familiarity of the hull calmed him, and reminded Gordy that this was just another ship that another team had built, albeit for Germans and not Americans. The sailors inside had no idea that someone like him lurked outside. As long as he kept clear of a periscope's view and listened for critters, he could scope out the area. Perhaps they hadn't tried to lay any of the mines just yet. A thin arm wrapped around his neck, spindly hands clawing at his face. Caught off guard, Gordy jabbed back with a meaty elbow and was rewarded with a bite to his shoulder. The thin skin suit did little to keep teeth from sinking into his skin. Gordy grimaced at the pain, knowing better than to cry out. If there was even a mediocre set of ears in that Nazi rust bucket sub, they would hear him for certain. The thought of a torpedo suddenly set on him spurred him to action. He reached back clumsily for something to grab, but his assailant was too quick. Webbed hands proved unfit for close-quarters combat, but a fist could buy him time. Gordy punched back and connected with the body, the blow enough to loosen the arm about his neck. He tried again, and for a moment he was free. The heel of the other diver's hand hit him close to the temple, hard enough to hurt, but not accurate enough to be of real concern. Gordy threw another punch blindly towards the shadow, missing in the dark water. He hadn't counted on someone else being there, especially this far away from shore. Gordy thrashed as teeth sank into his ear, groping blindly as a hand raked across his back. Another came across his face as if to rip off a diver's mask, and the fingers paused for a brief moment as they touched skin, and nothing more. The slow and steady groan of a Coast Guard cutter carried through the water, and the clawing at his eyes abruptly ceased, even as he closed a webbed hand around a thin forearm. Gordy whipped his attacker around, staring into the masked face with a mixture of shock and surprise. Like Gordy, the Nazi diver wore no helmet or tether. But while the Navy's own seal needed no goggles, this diver wore a thick face mask to see through the water. He tried to close a hand about the mask, but the diver brought up the other arm and pressed an elbow into his sternum. It did little good. Gordy wrapped a meaty arm around the much smaller person and squeezed tightly. He gave a mighty kick and began to swim to the surface. Perhaps the two military men on the cutter could interrogate this strange creature, who wore a swastika, but shared his unique talent. The diver gave a feminine shriek as Gordy began to ascend, and struggled more fiercely in his arms. The face and the mask that covered it came down hard on the bridge of Gordy's nose, and he was unable to contain the yelp as he brought both hands to his face. The Nazi diver darted back to the U-boat, quickly disappearing into what appeared to be a modified torpedo chute. Rather than follow her, Gordy quickly rose to the surface and began to swim for the cutter as blood streamed from his broken nose. Time was of the essence. Now, it was only a matter of who would be able to fire first. They had heard the ships in the distance before she returned, bruised and bleeding around her mask. The men in the torpedo room did not concern themselves with her safety, throwing her aside like so much garbage to ready the attack. The officer who had brought her on board found her moments later, and he hauled Katya to a standing position and shook her violently. "Did you set them? Did you put them out before they came?" He tightened his grip, his expression darkening as she shook her head from side to side. Before she could offer some explanation, he threw her against the wall. The back of his hand cracked across her face, the blow drawing blood from her mouth. She staggered back, only to be shoved forward by a crewman. He snapped at the officer, who shoved her ahead of him towards the control room.
The explosion threw them both forward, the alarms drowning out the groan of metal and the frantic barking of orders from every compartment. The craft heaved to starboard, the outer hull scraping against the seafloor. She clung to a pipe, fingernails scraping the inside as she fought to stay upright. Behind her, a rush of water overtook the screams of the crewmen in the torpedo room. Young men, some the same age as her Vili, cried out as the SS officer swung the bulkhead door shut. The cries were not unlike those she had heard in the concrete buildings when she had arrived at the camp, and the noise chilled her to the bone. Katya shared a frightened look with the SS officer. His fear soon became envy as his eyes roved over her suit and mask. She shrank back, lest he strike her again. Through the other bulkhead, she could hear the officers barking orders in their crisp German, the words unfamiliar but the urgency unmistakable. Water pooled about her feet, the level rising quickly as the seal to the torpedo room weakened. Within minutes, the compartment would be filled, and the rest of the submarine would be little more than a tomb awaiting the deaths of the condemned. The aft door continued to leak even as the officer pounded the forward hatch and yelled through the bulkhead. She moved towards the broken door, her handler still trying to persuade the others to open the forward hatch. She knew she could survive on a single breath for more than an hour, while this man would drown within minutes. With an almost serene smile, Katya put her hand to the latch and pulled open the door to the torpedo room. Water and fuel rushed past her, and she quickly ducked beneath the surface. A broken piece of pipe clenched in her fist, she swam to the bulkhead. While they could not survive in the water, she could use her curse to solicit aid from the enemy. She swung the piece of pipe wildly, missing her mark but still catching him off guard. He whirled around, surprised and frightened as the water continued to pour in from the torpedo room. She swung again, catching him between the eyes this time. He slipped beneath the water, unable to stand as the rush grew stronger. She brought the pipe down a third time with surprising ferocity, crushing his windpipe with the force of the blow. With the level rising past her shoulders, Katya took a breath and ducked beneath the surface. Perhaps she would survive to find the other breath holder that the Allies possessed. As the Coast Guard cutter stood watch, a crew of divers worked to attach cables and canisters to the sunken submarine. Gordy worked like a relay runner, moving constantly between the boat and the underwater team. As the last cable was pulled tight, the rest of the crew began a slow ascent along the lead cable. Come up too fast, and they would be plagued with the bends. Some watched Gordy with envy as he swam to the surface for another breath and disappeared beneath the surface for one last check. He could feel the blood pounding slow and heavy in his ears. Gordy squinted through the murky water. Not 30 seconds later, he froze as a sharp sound cracked through the water with surprising volume. It came again, followed by a heavy metallic groan that sent pulsing vibrations against his skin. Gordy winced, nostrils flattening as he dove deeper. A rush of bubbles shot past him, and he looked down at the crippled beast on the seafloor. He swam the length of the craft twice. Aft of center along the port side, the hull had suffered a massive breach. Experience at the yard told Gordy that it had been a torpedo hit, and an insufficient one at that. Most of the submarines that got hit were never so lucky as to be so intact after a fight. No wonder the Navy boys wanted him to find it. Another shot cracked through the relative stillness, followed by several more. They came from the inside, which meant two things. One, someone was alive in there, and two, they wanted to ensure that others would be dead. Gordy pulled his hand back from the helm and began to swim to each of the canisters. Whatever had fired those shots had to be on the inside of the submarine, and Gordy had no desire to wait around to see what might happen. Bubbles streamed from the top hatch as the wheel inched around, the seal to the inner compartment giving way, as something inside attempted to escape. Placing himself on top of the hatch, Gordy gripped the wheel to keep it from turning, and to keep whatever it was inside from escaping. Gordon Wendell was a big man. A half-inch thick layer of skin and fat covered a muscular frame, and at nearly 300 pounds,
His weight set firmly atop the hatch made anyone's escape nearly impossible. It did not, however, keep the person on the other side from trying to turn the wheel. Gordy braced himself against the rail and pushed against the efforts of whoever was on the other side. For a moment, there was no resistance, but through the water in the hull he could hear the muted sounds of a struggle on the inside. A gunshot, he was close enough to be certain of the sound, rang through the compartment before the wheel began to turn in his hands again. The water rushed past him as the canisters popped, air filling the balloons as the cables assisted the submarine's rise to the surface. Gordy fought the pull of the water and the still desperate attempt at the person on the other side of the hatch. He groaned as the water broke over his back, the submarine heaving topside like some grievously stricken leviathan. Within minutes, a half-dozen men had their sidearms trained on the hatch, the officer in charge of the operation calling for Gordy to step back and let the wheel turn freely. With nothing to keep the hatch closed, Gordy watched as the only entry to the submarine flipped open and a thin woman in a skin suit scrambled out of the compartment. Wild-eyed, she looked to the sailors, babbling in a language that Gordy couldn't quite understand while frantically rolling up the left sleeve of her skin suit. "Hands up, miss!" one of the officers barked. "Now!" He repeated the order in broken German, which had the desired effect. Slowly, she brought both hands above her head. The sleeve of one arm pulled back far enough to reveal a series of numbers and symbols tattooed on the inside of her forearm. Her voice shook as she tried to speak, her own German heavily accented. "Offenen," she struggled to say. "Ich bin offenen." She searched the faces of the assembled sailors for some sign of understanding, repeating the first word more slowly. For a brief moment, her eyes met Gordy's, and she gave an apologetic nod when she saw his broken nose. He nodded in return and noted the bruising around her mouth and jaw. He knew that he hadn't caused that particular injury, and he scowled at the hatch from where she had escaped. A series of shots rang out from below deck, bullets hitting the end of the hatch and the rail. The young woman crumpled to the deck with a cry of surprise, and the assembled sailors opened fire into the U-boat. As Gordy reeled with the shock, it was over almost as soon as it had begun. Two of the sailors dragged the woman's body away, and the officer in charge slammed the hatch and motioned for a crewman to seal it shut. He turned to the rest of the crew, red-faced and screaming orders at the top of his voice. "Cut the line! Drop charges and sink that piece of junk! The only Nazis coming out of that can had better be dead ones floating to the top!" On the quarterdeck of the Coast Guard cutter, Gordy watched with a mixture of shock and guilt as they carried the woman's body past him. The officer who had spoken to her in German came up next to the large man and offered him a cigarette. "A woman. Never told us nothing about a woman being there. Guess those scum have no decency." He pocketed the pack at Gordy's polite refusal, and they both watched in silence as the soldiers placed the body in a canvas bag. "Guess you didn't know either." The man whom they had named the Navy SEAL shook his head, his mouth drawn up tight to keep him from crying. Guilt and anger churned his empty stomach, and he looked away as the bag closed over the gypsy woman's face.
"No, sir, I heard someone trying to get out when I found it first. If I'd known..."
The commanding officer of the ship approached the pair, the other man saluting his superior while Gordy did his best to respectfully mimic the greeting. The CO dismissed the other man and pulled Gordy to the side. The hand on his shoulder eased some of the tension, but it did little to alleviate the feeling that, had he paid more attention, the young woman might have survived. Gordy bowed his head, her silent apology forever imprinted on his mind's eye.
"Son..."
the man began, even though he couldn't have been more than 10 years older than the shipyard worker.
"We all have jobs asked of us, and when we perform them to the best of our ability, that's all we can do."
He spoke the words with an air of detachment, as if the Navy prescribed them for this very situation.
You done the right thing. Done your country proud.
The sea heaved and shook as the depth charges ensured the final resting place of the German submarine. With his task complete and the parcel retrieved, the Navy SEAL leaned heavily against the railing and anxiously awaited their arrival in port. While he wished to return to the simple life of Norfolk shipyards, Gordy suspected that the military men had other plans for him. The Germans had more U-boats, and there was a wealth of coastline that needed protecting. And for this war, the United States had but one Navy SEAL.